Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Real Spoilers, powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real Spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 277, Return of the Attack of the Revenge of Deep Fried Tacos.
It's a really catchy title.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I've been working on
that.
It just
rolls right off the tongue.
It does.
Yeah.
So before we dive in, let's go around the table and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Dan.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. So a deep fried taco, for those of you that are unfamiliar, the uninitiated. So we do these every once in a while when it's a light week on movies. And a deep fried taco is a phrase that Dan coined.
That's correct.
And it's something that you know is bad, but you still enjoy it anyway.
Because we don't, we think the term guilty pleasures is not fair.
It's delicious.
Here's the deal. If you ask us objectively, is this a good or a bad movie? I think in most cases we would say it's a bad movie.
Sure.
These aren't bad movies that we're enjoying ironically. These are movies that people have deemed bad that we really, truly enjoy.
Correct.
Yes. For their own sake.
Yes.
Not tongue-in-cheek, not through the prism of nostalgia, but just like we really enjoy these movies.
Correct.
Even though other people would tell us they're awful.
Yeah, something like Monster like Squad is Joe's.
Exactly. Monster
Squad.
That was never
one of my deep fried tacos.
And I love
great example.
We just made the same. I was going to make the exact same joke.
It is Monster Squad. For me, it's Killer Clowns from Outer Space. I know.
I think it's absolutely a horrible movie,
but it's
Con
so good.
Air was one of my picks. Thank you very much.
I'm pretty
much.
Sure it's Monster Squad.
That's a movie, but
yeah, it's one of the episodes.
But then Monster Squad.
A perfect example
is Monster Squad. It's absolutely a deep.
You.
That is.
How about that? Edit that.
He's wow. Making you edit just out of vengeance.
Oh, I can just turn the whole track off.
Do you not consider that a deep fried taco?
No.
Really?
Yeah.
No, he loves it because it's great.
Okay, I think it's great.
Well, okay, majority rules, though.
Right.
So it's a deep fried taco.
Take it to the Facebook
group. The world has deemed it a bad movie.
I would say it's probably a deep fried taco.
But you truly enjoy it.
Anyway. I do.
Yeah. Mean, I don't question you. Your love for it. I mean, we did an entire show because of you.
That's true.
I mean, like Super Inframan, if you've never seen that, it is such a fantastic bad movie. It's kind of like an Ultraman kind of a thing where it's one of those Hong Kong guy in a suit
Con Air
jumping around.
Is a prime example of a double deep fried taco.
Yeah.
Like that is awful movie.
Well, you Con Air and Face Off feature of double.
Like my
99 cent deep fried tacos.
Yeah. Right, I think my first one that we did was Adventures of Ford Fairlane.
It was, yeah.
I
take no pride.
I think it was year one.
I did year one.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that movie.
Yeah.
I don't remember what I did.
I think I did Con Air and Airheads.
I did Hackers at some point, right? Yeah. I had.
There's another one in there. I don't remember what it was.
And then I also did Ishtar.
Yeah.
That's right.
I really enjoy Ishtar.
Did I do The Last Action Hero? Because I wanted to, but I thought maybe I'd already done it. That's perfect.
Like you don't want to say that monster movie is deep fried taco.
Monster Squad.
Yeah. We don't even name it.
Trying to support.
You know,
less.
Now that I'm saying that, that may have been one of the first ones I picked.
Yeah, and it's like, and I want to say that like Roadhouse is a deep fried taco.
Oh yeah, that's tough though. Like I think Roadhouse is. I think I don't really know anybody that doesn't like Roadhouse.
Yeah, but
that's a deep fried taco.
It's terrible.
It is a bad movie.
I think they all kind of enjoy it for the same.
There's so much in this movie where you're like, well, this movie makes no sense.
That remake got canned.
Well, Ronda Rousey isn't exactly winning fights anymore. Yeah, wasn't wait a minute, wasn't that the most popular athlete in the world?
Yes. She was. She's not anymore.
Yes, deep fried taco. Yeah. So each when we do these, each one of us brings a deep fried taco to the table, and then we get to enjoy or mock the others accordingly. So if it's a good deep fried taco, we will enjoy with them. If it's Monster Squad,
The funny thing is that we're probably outnumbered by listeners that love Monster Squad.
We really are.
So I mean, this episode is sponsored by chickens.
So who would like to reveal their deep fried taco first?
I feel like I always go first. Somebody else go first.
All right. Well, I have one that I had been thinking about for a long time, and I hadn't watched it in a while, and it's one of those weird ones that, you know, for a lot of people, they're not even aware of this movie. And it's from really one of our most prolific and probably one of the, I would say, greatest living directors right now, Steven Spielberg.
U-Bowl.
Oh. Yes. And it's from 1979, and it's the movie 1941.
Oh.
And if you've...
It's weird to see.
Are you sure that this hasn't been brought up before?
I don't think this was a deep fried taco.
We've talked about it.
Okay.
It's weird
to scratch the surface of this movie.
It's weird to see a comedy with so much production value.
Well, see, that's the thing. Is this movie, okay, this movie is, this is Steven Spielberg riding high after Jaws and Close Encounters. And this was the next movie after that.
Yeah.
And the first thing, you know, that sets the tone for the movie is that he parodies himself.
Is this Belushi and Aykroyd?
Belushi, Aykroyd, okay. John Candy, Ned Beatty. I mean, the list of people in this movie is a huge, there's a ton of them. I mean, Mickey Rourke is in a bit part. Treat Williams is in it.
Mickey Rourke is like 10?
He's got a baby in this movie. He's almost unrecognizable.
All the facial surgeries.
But, oh my God. Let me go through this. Murray Hamilton, who's fantastic as the mayor in Jaws.
Yeah.
Christopher Lee, Tim Matheson, Warren Oates, Robert Stack. I mean, it's got a ton of people in this.
You know, they did movies like Airport back then, where it was like all the they were just cramming tons of
as many people as they could.
This movie is kind of like the comedy version.
Yeah, it's weird because it's part Stanley Kramer and part Stanley Kubrick. because it's got a little bit of Dr. Strangelove in there, and I think that's because of Robert Zemeckis and Bob Gale, who wrote the script, who went on after this and did Back to the Future. But before this, around this same time, they did Used Cars. Zemeckis did his own thing. But they had a script that was a little bit darker, but Stanley... So there was a little bit more of a Stanley Kubrick, Dr. Strangelove vibe to it. But Stanley Kramer... best known for directing, a lot of amazing movies, but directed It's a Mad, 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 Mad World, and this cribs heavily off of that, sort of like you have a core story, and then it just sort of branches off and it cuts back and forth between all these different scenarios.
I've never seen this movie. I always saw the cover, and I didn't know what to think of it, because I saw, like, John Belushi, but then I'm like, it's a war movie. I just didn't understand
It is. I mean, there's no way to summarize this movie, because there's so many fragmented stories, and honestly, it's got a lot of great parts and a lot of great... I mean, I hadn't seen it in a long time. I saw this at the theater and then saw it again that same summer at the drive-in in a double feature with this and Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band.
Oof.
Mm. Yikes. Which is... I can't even put that... I mean, that's not... That's just...
That's an unfried taco.
That's a deep-fried turd.
I
remember watching that and thinking... This is terrible.
They don't. Is that the one where they don't do their voices?
It's the one with Peter Frampton and the Bee Gees.
Yeah, and it's all
doing Beatles songs.
Doing Beatles songs.
Because nothing says Beatles like Peter Frampton and the Bee Gees.
That's so weird.
You got George Burns singing When I'm 64. And
Alice Cooper's in it.
Steve Martin doing Maxwell Silver Hammer.
Aerosmith does come together, though. And they do a pretty good job of that.
Yeah.
It's a head-scratcher.
Oh, it was terrible. Terrible. But 1941, which is a long, loud, disjointed, and it's kind of a mess. But it is, the production value is really, really good.
It's funny, Stanley Kubrick said of the movie, did you see this quote? Mm-hmm. He said that he told Spielberg, it's great, but not funny.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and that's the funny thing is that...
Did they know they were making a comedy?
Well, they were trying Spielberg wanted it to be wackier. So he made... He jammed more in there and made it louder. Because this is his first attempt at comedy. Now, yeah. He's had funny parts. And he's had funny parts and movies that aren't comedies actually stick the landing way better than this. And it's still... perversely enjoyable
in spite of itself.
Yeah. I mean to you know there I think the core thread of the story is that the idea is after you know it's also why John Wayne who Spielberg pursued for this movie and John Wayne they were friends apparently and John Wayne said no it's un-American. The idea is after World War II or after Pearl Harbor America is obviously high alert, and there's fear of, you know, the mainland being attacked. And sure enough, there's a Japanese sub. And in this Japanese sub, you have Toshiro Mifune and, you know, an amazing actor. And then Christopher Lee, as a Nazi, teamed up, and they have a sub off the coast of Santa Monica. And it's how this, you know... the American people, you know, people slowly find out about the sub and how they react to it. And you've got, yeah, John Belushi plays a rogue pilot who's literally a rogue pilot. He's just flying around over California, stops at a gas station to fill up and blows up the gas station.
What?
And that's it. I mean, there are scenes in this movie where it's like, you don't know why they're in this movie, but they work in themselves. It's like they're bits, and it's almost like watching sketch comedy about 1941, sure. And then they just stitched it together.
Now, do all the stories and characters tie together in the end?
They all overlap, sort of.
Because this sounds like the original Gary Marshall movie. You know, like,
oh, yeah. I mean,
when you say when you mention all the actors and all the different stories that they filmed kind of separately and then they come together, it almost sounds like one of those holiday things.
In a movie like It's a Mad, 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 Mad World, there's a single incident at the beginning. And some people hate that movie and some people love it. And I think it probably exists somewhere in the middle. That's a movie that happens. It springs forth from a single incident and then it kind of goes in separate ways. But it's always about that core incident. And then it comes back together at the end. Which is why it works. This one, it's just, you know, what happened. I mean, unfortunately, the movie is about, you know, what happened at Pearl Harbor.
Sure.
So, kind of a downer, you know. But the movie opens right off the bat with Spielberg parodying himself. He parodies Jaws, and going so far as to have the actress who played Chrissy playing
Chrissy. Have you seen her today?
Yeah. Ooh, well, she's spent a lot of time in the sun.
Yes, she
did. So she basically, Elliot's shot the same way. She's nude sunbathing. She's jumping into the water. She's in the big, except for this time, she's on the opposite coast. And the music from Jaws starts playing.
Really?
And, yeah. But instead of a shark, it's a submarine that rises up beneath her.
Oh, that's funny.
And we find out that the Japanese are going to, they need to, you know, this fleet feels like they need to bring something home, a win for Japan. So they're going to bomb something equally as worthy as Pearl Harbor. So they decide they're going to bomb Hollywood, which doesn't even make sense because, you know, so they're on this quest to find Hollywood. And that pretty much sets the tone for the movie. You've got... Slim Pickens is in this movie as Hollis Wood. He's a Christmas tree farmer.
Because why not?
Because why not? Yeah. And he goes so far. I mean, you got Slim Pickens from who's a great character actor and so good from Dr. Strangelove, parodying his own bit from Dr. Strangelove where he's talking about the care kit that all the soldiers have, you know, as they're going through like, you know, a Cracker Jack box. It's so nonsensical. You may have seen this.
I've seen it, and it's been a while, but yeah, I was just kind of bored.
Yeah, the funny thing is I watched the extended director's cut.
Yeah.
And it actually is similar to what Zack Snyder does. It's like makes more sense. It doesn't make it better. It's like,
but it explains things.
But it takes more time.
Right. Yeah. For a movie that was already pretty bloated.
It's a pretty bloated movie. But it is, I mean, there are bits of this movie that are great. There's, this guy who's not a soldier who, you know, he just wants to dance. and he's learning how to jitterbug and all this other stuff, and he decides that he wants to
dance. In 1941, wanting to dance to keep you out of the army.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, wants to dance with his girl, and there's going to be this big USO event. Problem is, it's only for soldiers. So he's trying to figure out how he can get in. So, it's all about him, stealing some soldier's uniform so he can get in and dance. And there's an incredible scene that it's like a choreographed dance number. It's a dance number / fight. And
that sounds eerily reminiscent of Temple of Doom.
Yes.
In fact,
that was like his first foray into this.
Yeah.
And Joe Flaherty is like sort of like the MC. Joe Flaherty from, you've seen him, character actor, mostly known from SCTV. Penny Marshall's also in this scene. I mean, there's so many bit people.
Just showing up.
Yeah, they're like, this Spielberg kid's going to be big. We got to get in his
movie. He's
going
to be somebody. Yeah. Oh, I mean, they gave him, you can tell, this is what happens. Like, he was not at the point of his career to handle this movie. And they clearly gave him everything. And some of the model work and the miniature work is fantastic. Because there are scenes in this movie where you're like, I almost can't tell if that's
that's pretty good
miniature or if that's really a plane flying. It is just a disjointed, weird experience to see it. But like I said, there are great little, there's a great musical number, and then it turns into a giant intermilitary battle set to the music from The Quiet Man.
Okay.
There's a funny John Candy plays a soldier who's extremely racist and who has a cohort on the tank that they're in who is African American, and their interplay is pretty comical. Dan Aykroyd's in the movie and he plays. He it's funny because Dan Aykroyd kind of does his thing where, and I think we've recently found out Dan Aykroyd, he's talked about being on the spectrum.
Yeah.
And he's like a guy who works in the motor pool and he's delivering a heavy artillery machine gun to a house along the California coast. In the event that there is a threat, they decide that the best thing to do is to leave his gun in the hands of a dad,
sure,
played by Ned Beatty, to defend the coast should that happen. And he starts ticking off he's like, well, I just work in the motor pool. I don't really know anything about this. But and he goes into this whole spiel, memorized front to back about this, how to operate this entire gun. You've got Belushi playing Belushi.
The crazy pirate.
Yeah.
The crazy pilot.
I remember Belushi scenes almost entirely being by himself.
They are.
Yeah.
They mostly are. In fact, he does interact with Robert Stack. And Robert Stack is so, so good in this movie.
Which, by the way, they added the first season of Unsolved Mysteries to Amazon, right?
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So Robert Stack, it's
have
funny.
They solved him?
He kind of,
nope.
Oh,
he kind of plays against type because he's the only voice of reason. He's a general who's just trying to calm everybody down. And he's saying there's nothing to be worried about right now. We're all safe. And he really just wants to go see Dumbo.
The movie?
The movie. And Dumbo plays heavily into this movie. Oh. And he's at the theater and all of this chaos is happening outside. He's inside the movie, Dumbo. Crying along baby mine.
He was an airplane, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
But and that was even hammier. And this one, it's like you forget what a good actor he was. And
he's
has
alive.
A scene with Belushi.
He's alive.
No, he died. He has a scene with Belushi that's pretty funny. Otherwise, there's a moment where Belushi salutes to Aykroyd and Aykroyd. I mean, that shows how they didn't think this movie through. You've got Belushi and Aykroyd at the height of Animal House and Blues Brothers.
I was like, they're not together.
And don't have them in a scene
and
together.
I kind of always thought that maybe it cost more
to have them together.
You know what I mean? They didn't want to do a movie together, and so they both took roles in the movie. But for instance, when Juno came out, it's got Michael Cera and Jason Bateman, but they don't have any scenes together.
They don't. That's
and
right.
They said that they made a point to not put them in scenes together because they were afraid it would.
And also, you can't. What Jason Bateman's character is doing in Juno.
Sure.
That's so far from.
Yeah. But they were like, we can't. If you put those two in a scene together, you're going to think Arrested Development.
Yeah. And what they were trying to do with that character is make him so unlikable.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, unlikable. you liked him up until a point.
Right.
And then he became very unlikable.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is worth looking at. And even Spielberg, he has a weird relationship with this movie because he still defends it. But he also admits it's like,
it's flawed.
It's absolutely flawed.
He defends this one, but won't defend Hook.
Well,
love Hook. All right. That's a deep fried taco.
I don't think that's a deep fried taco.
Well, that's one that I did, I'm pretty sure. Oh. Yeah.
But I mean,
he's like, by virtue of definition, it's a deep fried taco. Right.
No, I mean, it's definitely, I mean, it's
was it better received than Hook?
I'm just kidding. Like,
no, I feel
like it was lambasted.
It was lambasted. It did well. It didn't kill Spielberg's career.
No, that's true.
It did 90 on a 30.
He learned from this movie.
In the 70s.
Absolutely. He didn't really, I don't think he's ever really revisited comedy, a traditional comedy.
But I mean, he's always got comedy in there somewhere, but not straight up.
I can't think of a movie he's made that's just a flat out comedy.
No, this was it.
Yeah.
He's above that at this point, you know? Spielberg isn't making comedies, he's making the prestige.
Well, right. I mean, Lincoln was pretty funny.
I mean, I thought Schindler's List.
Laugh riot.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it is absolutely worth checking out because there's moments of brilliance in this movie. There's great pieces in this movie, and it's just all put together. You're just like, whoa, I don't know. You know,
sometimes the best laid plans, doesn't work.
Yeah. And it's a great example. And the Blu-ray actually has both versions of it and like an hour and 40 minute documentary where, I mean, they really are, it's a pretty warts and all kind of documentary where like they're all looking at it in hindsight and being like, yeah,
it's like that De Palma doc. I love Bob, if you haven't seen it, I can't
Bob
remember.
Gale wrote it, right?
Bob Gale. Yeah. Bob Gale and Zemeckis.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they were, because I mean, they were like a co-writing team for a long time.
Used Cars.
Used Cars is an example of a movie that works because its scope and its idea and everything about it is all contained and it works. Like it's controlled. And that's a comedy.
Yeah.
But Spielberg didn't get behind it and go crazy.
Right.
Versus this one. Oh, yeah. Michael McKean and Lenny and Squiggy. They have like a teeny tiny part in this movie,
kind
too.
Of their bit.
Yeah, that's kind of the first time you really see them together.
Yeah,
right?
they're in this too.
Yeah, they're in 1941.
That's right.
They're manning a gun, and it's just there's so many pieces. Where you're like, hey, that guy, and then that's it.
Yeah, it's like a puzzle that doesn't quite come together.
It doesn't, but I mean, like, it's definitely something I liked better back in the day, and now I watch it, I'm like, huh,
huh. So, well, thank you, Dan.
Yeah, of course.
So who would like to go next?
I'll go next.
Okay.
So this movie is one that I just, every time I watch it, I crack up. I know that it's not a great movie. I know that it was lambasted by critics.
We already did Monster Squad.
Well, let's see.
Well,
so you're admitting that it's not a great movie.
No, it's perfect. I have that audio.
It's a great movie.
So it was lambasted by the critics. It was lambasted by the fans for the most part. But every time I watch it, I just think it's absolutely hilarious. So I think it is the perfect definition of a deep fried taco, at least for me. And that is Your Highness.
Oh, what a piece of shit.
Never seen it.
Oh my God, it's awful.
Directed by the same guy that did Pineapple Express, which, I mean, I think that's a hilarious movie. Have you seen Pineapple Express?
Yeah.
Right? Okay. Love Pineapple Express. Also stars James Franco and Danny McBride.
Yeah.
So it's the same team, same director, you know, so it's the same people doing another stoner comedy, except for this time it's set in medieval times. So
yeah, it's got Natalie Portman.
Yeah. And so in Pineapple Express, of course, it's Seth Rogen and
Danny McBride and
Danny McBride, James Franco. And they're like, it's a drug deal gone wrong.
Seth Rogen is like a straight laced kind of dude going to buy weed and then gets caught up in a big
and it's amazing. And it's absolutely hilarious.
I hate pop movies.
I'm not a huge fan
either. Think it's almost always just, it just telegraphs lazy humor for me. And so I was really surprised that I enjoyed Pineapple Express. Because
these writers are smart. The people, you know, and
Seth
Rogen.
Who wrote that?
Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg wrote it. So they're smart with their comedy. You know, those guys obviously have written a ton of great stuff recently. Going to Your Highness. So it's a lot of the same team involved, but it's set in medieval times. And, you know, it's funny, Dan, when you mention about, you know, Spielberg having a big budget for a comedy with 1941, the production value in Your Highness is amazing. Mm-hmm. It is a beautiful looking movie. I mean, comedy aside, and again, I really enjoy the stupid humor of it and everything, it is a beautiful movie. The cinematographer is Tim Orr, and he does the cinematography. He's the DP on all of David Gordon Green's films. Mm-hmm. So his first film was called George Washington in 2000. There's a Criterion version of it. He did that movie Joe with Nicolas Cage when he's in the woods. He did Pineapple Express, which was a beautiful looking movie too. So this, the DP on these films, Tim Orr, is amazing. But also with Your Highness,
I'm assuming he'll probably be doing Halloween.
Probably. And and so, I mean, that will, and so I really think that, one, it elevates the type of movie. Even, again, I like the material in this, but you know, for a comedy, which doesn't necessarily need to look as prestigious and big as, you know, some of these beautiful art house films and just beautiful films in general, you know, a comedy depends largely, of course, on the jokes and the writing. But when you look at these movies that this director does and that Tim Orr is a DP for, it's like they're gorgeous. And Your Highness has elaborate sets. I mean, they build these castle sets.
They spared no expense.
They did not. I mean, this movie has a big...
I noticed you haven't talked yet about whether or not it's funny.
I
haven't seen it, so I'm not even.
I did right off the bat. I think it's hilarious.
But it's like you spend so much time talking about how good it looks. But
right, I'm kind of just prefacing it with it's a comedy, but also it didn't make a lot of money, but they put a ton of money into it. But no, I started right off the bat. I think this movie's hilarious. But basically, it's set in medieval times. There's a, you know, castles. There's dungeons. There's beautiful countryside, beautiful,
giant turkey legs,
beautiful Natalie Portman,
absolutely. So it's like, it's amazing how good this movie looks. So just setting that up for a comedy, that's something that David Gordon Green has a very interesting take on these comedies, is that they also look amazing. But it's a story of these two brothers, and so Danny McBride and James Franco play brothers. Fabius is James Franco. He's got the long flowing hair. He's the perfect son. Charles Dance from Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. Tywin Lannister is the king, the father. And Fabius can do no wrong. He is, you know, out to slay the ogre, and he's gonna get married and carry on the family legacy. Thaddeus is just a screw up. Danny McBride can't do anything right. In the beginning of the movie,
The typical Danny McBride character.
Yeah. He, in the beginning of the movie, he's like about to be hung, and then you notice that it's little people, and so they go to hang him, and he just drops right through to the ground because their hanging platform is shorter than a normal one. So he ends up breaking the post down, and him and his he has an assistant, kind of like with Monty Python, you know, when the guy with the coconuts that follows him around, they kind of play up on that kind of relationship. So he's got a guy that follows him around, and all their assistants, Thaddeus and Fabius, they're all female names, which is just funny. It just adds to the, you know, the writing. And this was written by Danny McBride and another guy named Ben Best. So it wasn't Seth Rogen, because he's not in this one, I don't believe.
No, unless he shows up as like a cameo.
Yeah, so it's just James Franco and Danny McBride mainly. But anyway, so they go back to the castle, and the Fabius has announced that he's going to be married. So he's betrothed to Zoe Deschanel.
Yes.
In a very pleasing low-cut dress. Yeah. Like,
it's weird to see her dressed like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's very revealing.
She's always, I mean, she's become like the what's that? What's the, there's a term for it.
The manic pixie dream girl.
Yeah. Oh, right, right.
Yeah, and she does not dress
like that. No, I mean, they clearly dressed her very specifically for this movie, but she comes out, and so, like, James Franco's like, this is going to be my bride and everything, and Thaddeus is like, I'm not going to the wedding, screw this, and so Justin Theroux plays this evil wizard that's been terrorizing the castle and the countryside, and he abducts Zoe Deschanel.
Right.
So
has Justin Theroux ever played a good guy? I feel like he's one of those actors that's always like always a bad guy.
Yeah, pretty much. So anyway, so he comes and he's this like gross looking. I mean, Justin Theroux isn't a bad looking guy, but they make him like really ugly. I mean, and
when you get to hook up with Jennifer Aniston,
right?
You,
I mean,
can't,
it's
be a bad looking
prerequisite.
Guy. Yeah, right.
So he comes and he's like, you know, he's all, they gross him up or whatever, and he looks goofy. And he's
gross him up.
They do. he steals Zoe Deschanel away, and the father says, "You have to help Fabius on this journey to get his bride back." So it's like a buddy comedy team up movie with, you know, Fabius is,
it's
this,
kind of like Pineapple Express except in medieval times.
And it's a team up where, so you've got Fabius who's perfect, and Thaddeus resents him, you know, so he's always Fabius, and Fabius is so kind. Like, this is James Franco in the role. I mean, not that
this
I mind.
James Franco getting baked before every scene.
Probably. Well, that's probably
what do you
James
mean, what
Franco.
Do you mean probably, I guess.
But
research.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, I think James Franco can can act. I think he's been in some decent roles.
That dude is. You're right.
He really has range. He can do serious stuff. He can do stoner stuff. He can do the weird stuff, like with Spring Breakers. Like,
what a weird.
I mean,
movie
it's
that
not
was.
His fault that the character was like a play on Riff Raff. Like, he does it pretty well.
So,
yeah. You know?
So you know this movie parallels as far as sort of performance and I guess audience is that like if Pineapple Express was Cheech and Chong's next movie.
Okay.
This is Nice Dreams.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah,
totally.
Whereas Cheech and Chong's next movie was like plateaued. Like, yeah. Like even if you weren't, you know, because like I'm with you on the bot thing. It's like,
yeah.
But that movie is funny.
Yeah.
That's like, it's like half baked. I don't get it.
Yeah. But
at all.
But that, and it's sort of like Pineapple Express, yeah. Where it's like, you know, it rises above that. Yeah. This movie is like Nice Dreams, where it's like, yeah, I watched this. I watched it. Actually, we were in a car.
Is it
we were
like
on
Nice
a road
Dreams
trip back.
Or is it like
it's
Corsican
like,
Brothers?
No, Corsican. I appreciate Corsican Brothers for them like trying
to do something different.
Yeah. Yeah. No, this. I mean, this is like they had a script. They had success with their last movie.
Yeah.
And nobody said, is that going to work? And another movie like this is like Knights of Badassdom, where you're like,
oh yeah.
Is that I watched this and I was like, "Why they really spent a lot of money on this movie?
They really
which
did."
Which is the same thing with 1941. It's like,
it's amazing. And like I said, and that's why I bring up the looks and everything so much because
it doesn't work.
I think the movie is funny and I enjoy it on one of those bad, stupid comedy levels. But when I was rewatching this movie, I'm like, "Holy crap!" I just forgot how beautiful it is, and it's just amazing what they did with the filming. But there are a ton of people.
It's amazing who wrote the check for this.
Yeah, but there are a ton of people in this movie, so I want to go through just like you did with 1941. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. So Natalie Portman plays the love interest to Danny McBride. She is on a journey because the Justin Theroux's character, the wizard, also killed her family. So she's trying to get
revenge.
Do you
see her butt in this movie?
I think so. Yeah, was that the butt double though?
This movie.
Oh,
that might be the one where Natalie Portman had a butt double because there was a controversy.
There was, Mr. Skin.
Yeah.
Hey, so, it's Natalie Portman. I pay attention to that.
I have a book for you. I'll have to fight it. It's called The Bare Facts. I'll bring it in. You can have it.
All right, cool.
So
it's not all stuck together, is it?
No. It's a book.
All right.
Yeah, so
there's no pictures.
Is it Braille?
No, it's just basically a giant catalog of of exactly when a
the exact
part
time
appears in a movie.
So this is the internet in a book form, basically.
Yeah.
So Natalie Portman's in it. Toby Jones is in it. He plays like the castle, like I don't know, the
Nebbish.
Yeah, whatever.
Of course he does.
I already mentioned Damian Lewis from Homeland, right?
That's this is Damian Lewis before he's anybody.
Yeah, Damian Lewis.
This may be right after Band of Brothers.
Yeah.
This is after early, but he's like Thaddeus's sidekick. Like, you know how Thor has his, you know,
the
Sif and So they've taken.
Does he use his actual accent in this movie?
I was going to ask the same question.
I can't remember. I think he has an accent.
Heavy.
It's a thick accent.
It's not thick in this one.
Yeah, when you see him for real, you're like,
oh. It's very rare that an actor can pull off an American accent and not tip his hat.
Yeah, but for the
he's
longest
good.
Time, he didn't know because I guess Band of Brothers.
Did you ever see Life?
Yeah.
Man, that was a good show. They were supposed to, two seasons.
Was it based on the serial?
It was.
Or the board game?
Well, it's because it was on like the same time as Homeland.
They put it up against, no.
It was like right around
Homeland
the same time
was
as
after
Homeland.
This. But like they backed it. So they did a cliffhanger at season two, a cliffhanger. And then they didn't come back for a season three.
Yeah,
I and I was just like,
Soap did that at season five.
Yeah. At least you got five seasons.
Well,
this is two.
Yeah. A lot of shows set up for cliffhangers.
But Soap ended on like five cliffhangers.
Yeah.
Oh.
Every character was at a point where they were about to die. And like, and then they were like, you know, coming to
best. Yeah. And see, now everybody like who bitched at the end of Deadwood, which was hardly a cliffhanger.
That, I mean, they left
they're
it open.
Their stinking movie.
Good.
It looks like
I love
versus
that show.
Us who really liked Carnival.
Yeah. I was about to say the same thing.
I'm like, oh my god, please just one more thing. Just like a movie.
Excuse me, an hour and a half episode.
I've never understood with Carnival, like, just write a series of books.
Yeah.
Yes.
I would buy those in a heartbeat.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That movie, it was so made for that. And I mean, that first season was good, but that second season was so
they picked up their game in that second season.
That first season, like, they'd spent a lot of time spinning their wheels, and so I was just kind of like,
they were trying to like make their mythos.
Yeah, and I was like, I like what you're trying to do, but where are we going?
I actually
appreciate
that they did that in season one and didn't try to like retrofit it.
Yeah,
you know, like,
but season two,
season
they
two.
Like went.
They were off to the races.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so,
then the races stopped.
So anyway, back to this movie that I love. But no, it's, you know, honestly, I mean, I won't go into the plot in depth, but it's just them on this journey to get Justin Theroux's character to kill him, get back James Franco's bride, and on the way they go on a journey where they run into bad guys, there's fighting, there's just a bunch of silly...
It's a road movie.
It is. It's a road movie in medieval times. And I just...
It's a road movie with a schlong around Danny McBride's neck.
Yeah, there's one of the things where he like kills a huge like enemy creature and takes it as a necklace. Yeah, it's... The thing is, it's stupid.
It's hard to... Every time I see it, though, I'm like, ugh.
Yeah.
Because this thing just flapping around off of his...
Yeah.
But, you know, it's very dumb. It's like a stoner movie. Even... It doesn't...
Is there weed
They
in
do
it?
Smoke from a pipe in it. Right. So, like... But it's not revolving around. It is not a stoner movie. It's in the vein of it, like a stoner road trip. But for the life of me, the jokes are dumb. It's so stupid, but I love the way it's written. It's written by Danny McBride. He is playing the Danny McBride character that he does in almost everything, where he's like this stubborn, hard-headed, just foul-mouthed guy, you know? And I like it. Something about it clicks for me. And every time I watch it, I can't help but
laugh.
It's
one of the, like, when they announced that those two were going to do Halloween, and Carpenter's just like, yeah, I love their take on it. I'm just like, What could their take have possibly been that Carpenter was like, no, it looks good? Like, judging from their past.
The one that had a movie poster that said produced by John Carpenter.
Yeah, John Carpenter's Halloween.
Yes.
Yeah.
The one that said John Carpenter.
Right. But I mean, I feel like Blumhouse would not turn that franchise over to anybody.
I
trust
honestly,
Blumhouse.
I do too. I mean, more than I would
trust
Warner Brothers.
Not to.
No, yeah, that's the weird part. It's just like, what could these two comedy writers?
But they're good.
They are. But I'm just like, it's such a 180 from everything they've ever done.
But look at
Marvel. Look at Captain America.
But those aren't 180s.
What?
Captain America was directed by the guy that directed the Rocketeer.
You know, I'm talking about Winter Soldier, the one that they run everything now.
Comedy writer and look at Get Out.
That's true. That's a great point.
The guys that did Winter Soldier directed Community, directed Yumi and Dupree.
Yumi and Dupree.
And they did Captain America and now run the universe, directing Avengers Infinity War. So you can't really say that
anymore.
And
honestly, I think those guys, their output versus Joss Whedon's, I think theirs is better.
Absolutely. I agree. Joss Whedon only put two things out.
Two things out, and
you know, who would have thought putting Jason Segel in charge of the Muppets would fix
it fix it? Well,
it did. Also directed by the guy from Fly the Conchords, the creator of Fly to the Conchords.
Did he direct the second one, right? Or did he direct the first one?
Both.
Did he direct both?
I know he was very involved in both.
Yeah. Well,
why don't you look at the poster?
First because you're talking about the not
Jermaine Clement.
No,
no, no. Brett did the music.
Nicholas Stoller.
James Bobbin.
Oh, okay.
James Bobbin is the co-creator of Fly of the Conchords with Brett and Jermaine, and Brett did all the music, and then James Bobbin did the directing.
But I can at least see that from the music element standpoint. You know, it's a comedy with music, and you know. But anyway,
no, that's a good point, though.
Yeah.
That's true.
So I mean, it's interesting where they find these strengths in these directors. But anyway, this movie I think is really funny. It's a dumb movie, I'll admit it, but gets me every time. So that's why it's my deep fried taco.
Well, there thank you, Kevin.
You're welcome.
So Joe, you can do Monster Squad again.
I just watched it again.
I'll just play the recording.
I was having a bit of an issue because Dan and I had gone back and forth.
You've got issues.
Yeah. If we were going to do like summer movies
to wrap this up. We don't have time to go into
or like summer camp movies.
Oh, yeah. So I had said like summer.
Yeah, summer movies.
I didn't mean.
So I watched Friday the 13th Part 6, which I think is one of the better ones out of the
really?
Entire, yes. Yeah. Part 6 is a straight up Frankenstein movie. Like Part 6 is a lot of fun.
I've which never seen Part 6.
What's that?
Which one's
six is the one six. Where they bring back the guy. So Tommy Jarvis comes back. It's the guy from Return of the Living Dead.
You sneaking in a second?
No,
deep fried taco?
Dan asked me what
here?
It was.
Yeah, no, I was just an anthology movie.
Okay. No.
Well, you do get two right, for a dollar, right?
So that's what that one was, where he comes back, where they bring Jason back again. But
I gave you an excuse to watch that anyway.
Yeah, and I was like, of course. And then I thought, you know what? I kind of want to watch Cobra. Starring Sylvester Stallone.
Ooh, see,
so I watched
it. That is the epitome of a deep fried taco.
But I didn't pick it.
Oh,
and then I watched.
I love that car in that
movie. That's a great car. Never Back Down.
I'm the Cure.
Oh, so like, come on, such quintessential Stallone in the 80s.
Yeah,
but then I watched Never Back Down,
the UFC movie,
sort of. So,
what, the MMA movie?
It's the Karate Kid mixed with MMA.
Oh,
is this the one David Mamet wrote?
I don't think so.
David Mamet.
David Mamet wrote like Red Belt.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
Is this the one with Gina Carano in it?
No.
Who's the? I can't remember who's the girl.
Amber Heard.
Amber Heard
is the girl. It's like one of her first movies. So the story of this is Jake Tyler is a hothead who is constantly getting into fights, gets kicked out of all these different schools. They end up transferring to the school in some sleepy California, sunny California town.
They send him to live in China.
So his brother is a tennis prodigy. So they go to this town where they've got this special school for him and all this other stuff. He has a bit of a thing where if you bring up his dad who has died in a drunk car accident, he will beat the crap out of you. So that's how he he finds.
So Mr. Miyagi's just like, think about your dad.
No, Mr. Miyagi is the guy from Amistad.
Mm-hmm.
And the bad guy from in the beginning of Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, Damon Hansu.
Yeah, I can never pronounce that guy's
Digimon
name.
Hasu or
yes,
Damon Hansu.
He's Mr. Miyagi.
Yeah.
So he goes to the dojo, and the number one rule, Tom.
Don't talk about his dad.
Don't fight outside the gym. If you fight outside the gym, you're out. Everybody fights outside the gym. And everybody, this is like right at the time where cell phones and cameras on cell phones are becoming a thing. So anytime there's a fight somewhere, everybody's always.
They recorded like, it on their Motorola Razr.
Yeah,
flip
like
phone.
They're awful,
like,
of course. So Jake has earned some notoriety because he took out an entire football team because they brought up his dad. So he goes to this new school. They're like, oh, you're the kid, the football kid. So he meets the girl, Amber Heard. She tricks him into going to this party where her boyfriend beats the bejesus out of him, and of course Jake's like,
"Nah, that's like the D-bag guy." I can't think of who that is. But
he was like a douchebag in everything.
Yeah, he's
like
such
this,
a D-bag.
Like 2004 to 2006.
I was
like,
trying to
he
look.
Was, he was the Johnny of this movie.
Is this him, Cam Gidjanet?
Yeah, yes,
with and, blonde hair,
but,
oddly,
I mean,
but
yeah, but yeah. So there's even a scene where like Jake takes a shot to the ribs. And they're like, go after the ribs. I was like, sweep the leg.
Clearly,
like, yeah. It's beat for beat, a remake of The Karate Kid. Now, I have a history of some anger issues. I used to get in a lot of fights.
Oh, I should be nicer to you.
Well, they're past. They're
oh,
okay.
Good.
I've got. Yeah. Well. yeah. This movie is trash. Like, it's complete trash. But for whatever reason. Anytime it's on.
You right? Get it. See, that's the deep fried taco. It's perfect.
I get what a deep fried taco is. I've been doing these episodes for a while.
No, but I mean, that's perfect. That's great.
Yeah, no, it's awful. I think, you know, that its Metacritic score is like a 20, if that. Maybe a 30.
That's nice of them.
Yeah. But yeah, so it's, you know, and I don't know how else to describe it other than it's just a remake of The Karate Kid.
Right.
Before the remake of The Karate Kid, which came out like 4 years later.
Oh, now wait a minute. Is
The Kung Fu Kid.
Is this movie better than the remake of The Karate Kid?
I like the remake of The Karate Kid.
Really?
I didn't think there was anything wrong with it.
I mean, it wasn't. Jaden Smith is what he is.
Well, this is before Jaden Smith turned into a huge D-bag. He was like 8. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
This is before he turned into Jaden Smith. Like, he was just a, you know, cute kid that looked like Will Smith, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you know?
No, I didn't think The Karate
really?
The remake
I
wasn't
just thought
that
it
bad.
Was. I don't know.
It
I,
was what it was. Yeah. Like, it was a remake of a movie that I loved from the 80s.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so this. Yeah, so he starts to find his center. He gets kicked out of the gym, so he has to do a little bit of redemption. Comes back, the final fight, he tells him. So, like, Evan Peters is in this movie.
Yeah, same as his own.
Yeah, he's very young. I think he's very young in this movie.
Oh, he's got to be, yeah.
He gets tricked by the douchebag guy into, like, he beats the bejesus out of Evan Peters. They put him in the hospital. Jake goes back to not Mr. Miyagi and says, look, I know you said I can't fight outside the gym, but I need to fight outside the gym because there's this thing called the beatdown that apparently is just run at some random ass club. So it's a big tournament where everybody fights. And so the dream match is the champion, who is the douchebag, against Jake, who has now in the matter of like 3 weeks become an MMA black belt and has learned everything he needs to learn to beat the douchebag.
Well, clearly
this
there
be
was
due
a-
to a.
Montage.
Oh, there's a montage.
Same wavelength.
There's not one montage. Yeah. There's
that's
two
the
montages.
Only way in 3 weeks you can get your skills up to the highest level is through montage.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if I don't see montage on a calendar, I'm not doing it.
Well, the NFL has actually declared montage a performance enhancing drug. You
can't do them anymore.
You can't use them anymore. If they find out you did a montage,
you're in trouble.
You're suspended for like 4 games.
So they've got, and the soundtrack is, you can't buy the soundtrack to this movie because I don't think they got the rights to put anything on disc. Like they bought the rights for the movie.
They went on Napster to make the soundtrack for this movie.
But I don't think they got the rights to put them on a disc.
Right.
So like there's one montage by Rise Against. There's another one by Red Jumpsuit Apparatus, I think.
So you know what would have really worked?
I would have. It totally would have. So Jake goes to the beatdown. This is where he breaks
Thursday
his,
night beatdown?
Thursday night beatdown. It's the new show for WWE.
Sounds like a wrestling, yeah.
So he breaks his ribs. Somehow, he's able to...
He fights through that?
He fights through three broken ribs, because that's a thing you can do. But the bad guy gets disqualified in the semifinals.
The leg?
No, it was they go to. hit the ribs. Not the
yeah,
leg,
oh, sorry, right, I'm sorry, yeah.
So, like, it's almost anticlimactic where... Jake goes into he's going into his fight and he's beat up, but he knows he has to fight this guy. And then he's just like,
well, cause he never backs down.
That's correct.
Right.
Talk about spoiler.
Yeah. Right.
So he sees that the other guy got disqualified and he's like, I tap out. And everybody's like, what? He's like,
what?
Yeah. So he goes, well, if he's not fighting, I'm not like, I'm only here to fight him.
Oh, fuck you.
That's so dumb. So now both guys, like the two guys who win by one guy wins by disqualification. The other guy wins by not a tap out. So Jake walks out. Like he's like, I'm done. And he leaves. And then...
They fight outside the dojo.
They fight outside in the parking lot. And everybody's like, the real championship fight is
with
outside.
His broken
wait,
ribs.
Wait. They Rocky Fived it.
They did Rocky Five it. They absolutely Rocky Fived it. There's no stakes to the fight whatsoever.
They Karate Kidded it.
If you're
going to
steal from a Rocky, why would you steal from Rocky Five?
The worst one. Absolutely.
You could at least made the kid a Russian and had him fight, you know.
Telling you, Godfather 3. Rocky Five is just lame. That's all I'm saying. I feel like it's the one with the outsider that comes in to take over, and the old, you know, guy that you're used to following is competing with him. It's just the same story.
Touch me, I'll sue. That's not Don.
I know. We've been over that. We're not. It was his cosplayer.
Yeah, right. His cosplayer. So they fight. They, you know, and it's also weird. They have.
Well, you know why they fought.
They have to. Because he can't back down.
Yeah.
You can never back
down. What are you
going to do? The guy's like, let's do the fight. And he's like, I can't back down.
I can't do it now. So everybody goes on their merry
way.
Wouldn't
tapping out be backing down?
That's what I think.
Wait a minute. Yeah.
It's exactly
shouldn't it be called
down.
Sometimes it's okay to back down?
Sometimes you can briefly back down.
Yeah. As long as you're going to not back down.
Only if you're planning to not back
down.
That's only if you're going no holds barred.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. Yeah, I think about that.
Yeah.
That's another great
never
thing.
Back
don't
down.
Don't start him down another road.
Never back down asterisk.
Never back down to, it's all right sometimes.
Yeah.
Still not backing down.
Still not backing down.
So never like, not backing down.
Never not backed down.
Never
before.
Not back down again.
Twice removed.
Never say not back down again.
There is a never back down too. That went straight to DVD. Sorry, the guy who was in Spawn.
Huh. Michael J. White?
Yes. Yeah.
What?
Yes. Yeah. I've never seen it.
Okay.
So your movie ends. Everybody's happy. And then, for whatever, guy who...
Who won?
Well, Jake did.
Oh.
Yeah, come on.
Okay. With the broken ribs.
Yeah, he was going to lose, and he had him in a chokehold, and then all of a sudden he broke free and just beat the bejesus out of him.
Do you know how bad it would hurt to, like, move if he had broken ribs?
Yes. I've been there.
Yikes.
It's awful.
I'm just thinking of this fight.
You can't, like... Cough.
Breathe.
You can't breathe.
Right.
I sneezed
did he
one time. I thought I was
act gonna... like he had broken ribs.
No.
Okay.
Oh yeah. He'd if go, you mean ooh. By holding them.
Oh
yes.
Oh yes.
That's
universal. I forgot. That's the universal symbol for I have
broken
ribs.
Yeah, I have broken ribs.
Ooh.
Ow. You know, ow. When you go to the doctor, they say, "Hey, take this hand and just put it here for about 5 months.
You'll be fine.
Hold it.
Don't even worry about it." So, the weird part about the dumb part of this ending is like they're. So not only does Jake beat the douchebag.
Is there a post-credit scene where the find
so
Thor's hammer?
Right. And he not only does he beat the douchebag, he also steals the douchebag's girlfriend. And then like so they're at like this beach party somehow.
That's a classic trope though.
I know. But then they give each other the nod. Like I respect you.
Wait,
bro.
The D-bag then
this is after
he earns his respect?
This is the day after the fight.
After he beats him and takes his girlfriend.
Yeah,
beats him, takes his girlfriend.
That can only mean one thing.
Never back down.
Chlamydia.
Okay, it can only mean two things.
Gonorrhea.
Well, I would classify that under just all the same thing. The umbrella of STDs.
Okay. So
cuckold fetish.
That's exactly, yes. That's exactly what I got to watch. Just I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
I have to watch. But yeah, like they
now
give each other the nod.
Say bad things about me while you. Okay, please say bad things.
Yeah. But yeah, they get both give each other the nod. And I'm just like, well, that's weird.
Yeah, I don't think he'd be over that. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's
that's
like,
what
it's,
I'm saying. Cuckold fetish.
Yeah. It is trash to the nth degree.
Wow.
But man, it's I watch it every time it's on TV.
Well, mine goes in a slightly different direction.
Of course it does. Is it a talkie?
Well done.
I'd expect nothing less.
Yeah. Goodness, you talk about stealing my thunder. Now I have to think of a talkie real quick. So mine goes more for whimsy, and I really struggle with whether I should include this movie because there is an element of people that now say this is like a great movie, and I've mentioned it on the podcast before, but when it came out, people just had vitriol for this film because of the marketing department, quite frankly. They really missed...
Oh my God, it's Batman versus Superman.
No.
Oh.
They really lied about what this movie was going to be, and they made you think it was going to be this cute romantic comedy starring Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan.
Oh, yeah.
And instead, it's this really odd, whimsical movie called Joe versus the Volcano.
Yeah.
And I find this movie just positively hypnotic. I just think everything about this movie is just jaw-droppingly brilliant. And the thing is, though, that you really kind of have to be on the same wavelength with the movie. So when you tell people they're going to a romantic comedy and then you give them this, they're just going to be confused.
Yeah.
And that's what happened. And so... And it's certainly not a movie for everybody. Even if you had told people the truth, there would be a lot of people that would have walked in being like, this is just dumb.
It is an art house film that just happened to have two of the biggest stars of their day.
And a budget.
In a way that people, you know, and not in a way that people imagine them.
Right. And
it's not a date movie.
Because he's like a super, like, loser.
Yeah. So the premise of the film is that Tom Hanks plays Joe, and he works in this factory, and like you, it's done in such a way where like you can't even really tell what this factory is. And this, I think,
didn't it manufacture cups?
I don't think they ever told you what they were making, because I know when he quits, you see him like turning the knob on some big drain.
Yeah,
but they never tell you what
widgets probably.
Yeah, like, and it doesn't matter. This movie though is like,
yeah, it's got touches of Terry Gilliam in it.
Absolutely, I mean, yeah. And this movie's all is like a triumph of set design. Like it's like,
oh,
it really, they use that to cast. So when you're in this factory, it's just dark and dingy, but it's still done in this kind of like cockeyed, whimsical way of it's almost like what a child would think a dirty, dingy factory would look like.
The scene I always remember is him like pretending to get his eyeball sucked out by the fluorescent
lights. Yeah,
that scene is always stuck in my head.
And there's a scene where the guy who played Nick Tortelli on Cheers is his boss.
Yeah.
And there's just a scene where he's in the background over and over again on this having his phone call where he's like, I know he can get the job, but can he do the job? I'm not asking you can he get the job. Can he? I know he can get the job, but can he do the job?
It's such a strange movie.
And it's just in the whole movie's like that. Like it's just very quirky. And Meg Ryan plays three different characters in the film. Every woman that he like interacts with that's a potential love interest is played by her.
Right.
And the volcano.
And she plays the volcano. And and so this character finds out that he has a terminal disease. He has a brain cloud, and you know, and even
brain
then,
cloud,
a brain cloud.
Brain
like,
cloud.
And, but that's that's the tenor of this movie, is that like they give him a terminal disease, and instead of giving him a real disease that might send you off on your own, we're like, oh well, my aunt had cancer. This isn't funny.
Right.
They give him a brain cloud.
Yeah. It's like, all right.
And this movie is like so, like, is like it so creates its own universe
that you just are like, yeah, okay, he's got a brain clod. Okay, I get it.
Whatever.
And so, but instead of that being a curse for Joe, it liberates him, and he quits his job and he goes on this adventure, and he is approached by this tribe who has to sacrifice people to a volcano so the volcano doesn't erupt and kill everyone on the island. And so they're like,
can I tell you that when we see Meg Ryan going on this cruise,
right,
I always thought it was the same person. I didn't put together that it's three different...
Oh, she's playing three different characters?
I didn't think about that at all. I thought it was the same person throughout the entire movie.
No, it's... Yeah. But so they want him to come and be the person they sacrificed in this volcano since he's dying anyway. And he's like, well, why not?
Yeah.
And I'm going to go on this adventure, and at the end of 5 months when I'll be dead, I'll jump in the volcano, and then that'll be it. And so it's him going on this adventure, and it's just a delightfully whimsical movie, and it's from... the guy who had written the screenplay for Moonlight.
Oh.
No, Moonstruck. Moonlight.
Yeah, like Moonlighting.
That would be wildly different. yeah, for Moonstruck.
It's a big leap.
Yeah. And then he wrote and directed this movie, and it pretty much killed his career.
It did.
And
really?
And then he wrote the play that was then also turned into the Meryl Streep movie Doubt.
Which is
radically different from either of the other two movies. Yeah. And so
that's the nun priest one, right?
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. But this movie is it's really hard. They say that, that comedy is hard, and I would think this is even harder because it's whimsical.
It walks that line.
And it's really hard to capture whimsy without just either being too cute or just coming across as dumb. And I think this movie just nails it.
Yeah.
And it's just a delightful movie. Unfortunately, it's never been released on Blu-ray. You can pick it up on DVD for like $6. It's like
I had this on VHS.
Yeah. But it's just a delightful film.
This guy also wrote Congo, which was one of my favorites growing up. I mean, he wrote Alive. Yeah. The story of the soccer team, right?
Yeah.
Is it soccer?
It's awesome. So he wrote the screenplays for these, because Congo's was Michael Crichton, but
Yeah. He wrote exactly. He wrote Alive. There were a couple others on here. Robot in the Family. Do you remember that on VHS?
No.
Some silly thing. But I didn't realize, he had written a few.
So this guy, this movie, I think a lot of it was the expectations that people had.
Absolutely.
And the fact that it's like, oh, Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks, I love them.
Yeah, Meg Ryan was...
But if you were to recast this, like, you could cast this with just...
Kristen Stewart.
Two other actors... And make this the exact same movie the same way,
and it wouldn't work.
It wouldn't work. But you totally like maintain those expectations.
Yeah,
because it's because of the fact that it was Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan,
right?
That people went in thinking it's this movie,
right?
Simply because of them, they can play something that's a little,
they could do other things.
Yeah. And I'm trying to think of like who it could have been in that movie.
In that time frame.
Man, I don't
Julia
know.
Roberts.
No, he's talking about somebody that wouldn't have brought those expectations to the table.
If he would have brought like Al Pacino.
Right.
If you could have brought somebody else and make the same movie and people wouldn't have gone on, because a lot of what got this movie lambasted were those expectations. Not the movie they saw, but the expectations they had. If you would have brought in a more of a serious actor or an actor that was
or comedic actor who wasn't an A-lister, smaller.
I mean, somebody who brought in
Kim Cattrall.
I would question even bringing in comedic actors because I think that's what people thought they were going to get.
But I think you gotta
have romantic comedy.
But you gotta have somebody with comedy chops because there's so much humor in this movie. So you need an actor that can still do the funny.
Yeah,
funny.
I mean, this is closer.
Jeff Goldblum.
Maybe. He's quirky
Who's
enough.
Who's going to be in Jurassic World 2? I'm so excited.
Of course he is. But I also,
of course he is. I mean, that's a long shot.
But I also think that part of what makes the movie work is that the movie's quirky.
Yes.
The performances aren't.
Everybody's.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like Tom Hanks isn't quirky in the movie.
No, he's
like,
doing the Tom Hanks thing.
Meg Ryan gets a little quirky in that second character, the Flipperty Gibbet stuff.
Yeah.
But for the most part, the characters aren't. They're not quirky performances.
Goldie Hawn.
They're playing it pretty straight. She could have. Yeah, I could have seen her.
doing something like that. Yeah. So, but anyway, so that is my deep fried taco.
It's a good one.
Nice. So
it's not as good as year one.
Yeah. Well, what can, few things are.
Man.
So I guess that's it for this episode. Let's go around the table and everybody can say where to find them.
This is Dan. You can find me on Twitter at DanGraney67, GRANEY.
This is Joe. You can also follow me on the Twitter at JoeyButts, BUTTS21.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at KevinRBrackett and at ReviewSTL.com.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. Don't forget, you can find the show itself on Facebook at Facebook.com/Real Spoilers. Go there, share an episode, join the League of Show Sharers, perhaps go to the official show discussion thread at League of Show Sharers, our Facebook group, and you can maybe chime in with your own deep fried tacos or tell Kevin why his is so awful. Either or. I'm not trying to sway you. I'm just saying.
It's, you know, it's that or Monster Squad. I mean, we can talk about how that is absolutely 100% deep fried taco.
I let you guys off the hook with both.
You let us off the hook.
How kind
of
you.
Did you give us a thumbs up there, yeah. Van Helsing? You let us off the hook. As soon as Van Helsing gives an interdimensional portal thumbs up, he cemented that movie as a deep fried taco.
That is true.
He made that movie. That by itself made it.
Would you ever see another Fred Dekker movie?
Yeah, I absolutely love Night of the Creeps.
No, I'm not. I didn't say that. I said, would you ever see another one?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I am not a pro. This is not opposed to Fred Dekker. I mean, this is
great. Certain artists can have misfires. It happens.
Steven Spielberg.
So
I mean, it's absolutely
this movie is what we refer to as an upper Dekker.
Yeah. No, I mean, but that cemented that movie as a deep fried taco.
All right,
because they were like, well, I don't know what to do. I don't know. Have Van Helsing appear through a portal and grab him and thumbs up because that was a thing back then.
At the end of Terminator 2, the thumbs up is good. Going into the lava, that works.
Nah. See, when you watch it now,
it's not good.
That's stupid.
You like that movie in spite of that.
Oh, okay.
So, I do. Yeah. Anyway. So, but anyway, also don't forget we're available on iTunes. You can go there, rate, review, subscribe, and we greatly appreciate all the reviews that have been rolling in.
Yeah,
lately.
That's great.
So thank you
so
very much for that, especially from the people that we don't really know in real life.
Yeah.
So that's also nice. So that's it for this episode. Coming up on the next movie-based episode, obviously there'll be a box office report, but we will tackle Guardians of the Galaxy. That's the big one next week. So
I'll be here for that one.
And this time. Until then, you've been warned.
It's raining tacos from out of the sky. Tacos, no need to ask why. Just open your mouth and close your eyes. It's raining tacos.
It's raining tacos out in the street. Tacos.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Kenny. Lettuce and shells, cheese.